Next up is the meat of the performance. I shouldn't really say the meat, I'm a vegan. But it's the bulk of the performance. And the general theme is scientific fundamentals. I said earlier that this is an exceptional meeting because we don't have a quiz, for one thing, but also because today I talk much longer than I usually do. And in fact, that's all that the entire lab today is me talking. So if you're already sick of hearing me upstairs, that was a short lecture compared to what I'm about to give. It takes me about 2 hours to get through this. But believe me, as difficult as it might be to sit there and listen to me, it's easier than speaking loudly for 2 hours. So I want to get through this myself. All right, now, from now on, though, after the quiz, and by the way, the quizzes, I should have said, have to be timed. I have to cut you off, but they really are plenty of time if you have any idea what the answers are. Giving you more time doesn't mean that the answer is suddenly going to come to your brain. So prepare for them by listening to the recordings, as I said. Anyway, after the quiz on normal weeks, that's when you do whatever the activity is from the manual. So don't forget your manuals. Don't forget to bring them. Today you don't really need them, but you need your notebooks because you should be taking notes just like upstairs whenever I'm speaking. All right, scientific fundamentals, things that are fundamentally important, and this is an exhaustive list. There's other things that I'm not going to mention, but things that are important especially for the laboratory aspect of science, starting with quantities and units. Who wants to distinguish between these two or tell me what one is or the other is? Yeah.
Quantities is the amount of something, and units is how we measure it.
That's right. A quantity is basically anything that you can measure. And defined that way, you can hopefully easily see that there's really no limit to the number of quantities. All kinds of things you can measure, right? But a unit is different from a quantity. It corresponds to a quantity, but a unit is a predefined way of measuring a quantity. We measure quantities in specific units, predefined units. The best thing, though, is to just work with examples. I think it makes people understand a lot better to use examples. What's just one example of the unlimited number of quantities out there? Unlimited meaning it should be easy to come up with one.
Distance?
Distance is a good example. Anything you measure, you can measure, is a quantity. But distance clearly is a quantity, right? You can measure that. If you are choosing distance as the quantity you're interested in, notice that you have all kinds of choices with respect to units you could use. The so-called distance units. There's all kinds of them, right? Rods, miles, meters, cubits. There's been all kinds throughout history. They're all units of the same quantity. But you see the difference between unit and quantity. Or do you? By the way, when I say do you or do you understand, whether it's upstairs or downstairs, I actually mean that as a genuine question. It's not just a nervous tick. Meaning that I want you to tell me whether you understand it or not, specifically if you don't. And if no one bothers to say, no, I don't understand, I'm going to assume the entire class understands. And that can hurt you if you don't actually understand. So don't be bashful. All right? And by the way, when you do respond, speak as loudly as I am now so that everyone hears, including me. All right. Let's just give another example to hammer it home. What's another quantity? Your money is a quantity. Let's say value, monetary value. And there are all kinds of units for that, right? Cents, euros, blah, blah, blah. All right, now if you understand the difference between those two, I'm going to get a little bit more specific, because there are, for each of these two things, two categories. There's two kinds of quantities, and there's two kinds of units. The categories are fundamental and derived. So there are fundamental quantities and there are derived quantities. And it's a dichotomy, meaning that any given quantity is either fundamental or derived, not both. Exclusive or in terms of logic. There are fundamental units and derived units as well, which shouldn't surprise you because units correspond to quantities. But let me distinguish between fundamental and derived. Although there are limitless quantities, there's really a tiny number of fundamental quantities. The vast majority of quantities are derived. A fundamental quantity is one that stands by itself. It is not made up of other quantities. And I forget the exact number. There's only like 9 or 11 fundamental quantities in the universe. But there's no limit to the number of quantities in general. Well, most of those are derived. A derived quantity is made up of multiple quantities, at least two. Is what I mean by multiple. And so, if you know anything about chemistry, it helps as an analogy to think about atoms versus molecules. Atoms kind of represent fundamental quantities. There's only so many kinds of elements, right? 100 or so that are listed on the periodic table. They're not made up of other things. But there's millions and millions of different kinds of molecules that we've already produced, and there's no limit to how many more could be produced. Well, molecules are like derived quantities because they're made up of at least two atoms, maybe more. And let me give you a specific example to make another point. An oxygen molecule is made up of two oxygen atoms. So there's nothing but oxygen in an oxygen molecule, but it would still be considered derived in this analogy, even though it's oxygen, because there's two oxygens rather than just one. So it can be a derived quantity is made up of two or more quantities, whether they're different quantities or not. If a quantity is fundamental, then any of the many choices you have for units to measure that quantity in, they will by definition be fundamental units. And correspondingly, any derived quantity that you measure will have derived units to use. All right? Okay, that's the difference. Everyone clear on that?
Easy.
Let's go to, let's look at some important quantities for science and including biology lab. Time is up here as one. This is one of those few that are fundamental. Time is not made up of other things. It stands on its own. And therefore, all units that you could use, and there's a lot of units you could use, right? Seconds, hours, minutes, days, so on. Those are fundamental units. By the way, speaking of hours, minutes, and seconds, one thing that we're going to, that I'm going to be talking more about, and mainly bitching about, is that there's been all kinds of systems of measurement used throughout history. But there are only really two biggies that remain in wide use. Sadly, it's two. It should be one. But the United States has decided to thumb its nose to the rest of the world. That, and Myanmar, I think there's two countries left. The United States and Myanmar use the silly system still, the one that you grew up with. And the rest of the world uses the metric system, which is far easier, far faster to learn. And even Americans, if they're scientists, use the metric system. And the metric system is used universally in science. The silly system is used by non-scientific Americans and people from Myanmar. But anyway, there's units that you can choose from either system. And the units for time, which are hours, minutes, seconds, and so on, that's actually kind of an exception when it comes to the metric system. Hours, minutes, and seconds are units in both systems at the same time. They're silly units, but they're also metric units. They're not different. So an hour in the metric system is the same as an hour in the silly system. That's one thing to say about it. But also, the thing that makes the metric system so easy to learn and use is that it is a decimal system, which means it's based on powers of 10, except when it comes to time. Hours, minutes, and seconds are based on 60ths, right? An hour is divided into 60, not into 10 minutes, and a minute is divided into 60 seconds. If you're curious as to why that is, I never looked this up, but it occurred to me one day, I don't know whether this is true, but it seems like it should be, that 60 is convenient because it is evenly divisible by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12, 20, 30, and 60. Unlike most numbers that you can't divide it by that many. But anyway, all the other units in the metric system are not like that. They're all based on tens, which is why it's a decimal system. Okay, but time is fundamental, and time units are therefore fundamental. Mass is another one listed here. This also happens to be fundamental. What is mass, by the way? Well, I get that a lot. I was expecting someone to say weight, actually, because these are confused often, even by people who should know better. The reason that they are confused by a lot of people is that they are related. Mass and weight are related, but they are not the same thing. Mass is the amount of matter that something is made out of. How much mass means how much stuff is in that sample. Weight, on the other hand, is a force. It's an example of a force. All weights are forces, but not all forces are weights. Weight is specifically force due to gravitation. And that's why they're confused. I mean, the reason they're confused is that how much gravitational pull there is depends on the mass. So that's how they're related. Weight and mass are related, but they're distinct. Now, speaking of mass, which we're talking about, well, we're talking about both, but mass is listed here, what choices of units do you have for mass? What about in the metric system? The gram. Right, that's a unit of mass. And what about in the silly system you grew up with? No, that's a unit of weight. Yeah. What's the metric? I mean, the silly system unit for mass? That's also weight. Weight. So you've been learning this for 20 years. This is why I call it the silly system. It is the slug, which engineers used to use. American engineers used to use it as a unit. It's effectively dead now as a unit, but that is what the silly system unit of mass is, the slug. Now, pounds and ounces that you mentioned, those are units of weight. And to think about the correspondence between mass and weight, consider a bathroom scale. Actually, it'll work in any room of your house. But a scale that you stand on. When you stand on a scale, what are you directly measuring? Weight. The force of you pressing on it due to gravity. That is what weight is. It's a force. That force compresses the spring in the scale and moves the needle, assuming you have an analog one. Right? Now, for bathroom scales that are manufactured for Americans who have hang on to the silly system, there's usually two rows of numbers, big numbers and smaller numbers. The big numbers are the silly system. What are those units? Pounds, which they should be, because pounds are units of weight, and that's what you're measuring directly. But then there is the smaller row of numbers, which is the so-called metric equivalent, when it's not actually equivalent. This is what pisses me off about it. What are the metric numbers listed on the scale? Kilograms, which are not units of weight. They are units of mass. Now, imagine, because it's expensive to actually go through with this, so just imagine taking that scale to the moon and standing on it. When you make that trip, you're still made of the same amount of stuff. Your mass doesn't change when you're on the moon. You're just as massive. But because the moon has only about 1/6 of the mass of the Earth, that means it pulls only 1/6 as much. So you're going to weigh 1/6. Whatever your weight is at home on the scale, it'll be 1/6 of that, roughly, on the moon. And when you read it in pounds, that will be correct. Because your force is less. Your weight is less. Right? But when you look at the metric equivalent, it's going to say you are only 1/6 as many kilograms, which is false. You have just as much mass on the moon. Therefore, if you're going to put the second row of numbers in, it really should be units of weight, metric units of weight. Does anyone know what the metric unit of weight is? Or any force. Weight is just one force. Did someone say it? I must be hearing things. No guesses? Who is the very smart, or once smart, dead man who told us this, F equals MA? Yeah. Newton. And in his honor, we call the force unit the Newton. So that, if you want to give your weight in metric, you really should be saying, I'm so many Newtons, not kilograms. Or you should say, my mass is so many kilograms. Anyway, another nice thing about writing this equation up here, other than to tell you why it's called the Newton, is to show you that forces, all forces, have to be what kind of quantities? In the dichotomy of quantities, what kind of quantity is force? Derived. This equation tells you that. Because force is made up of mass and acceleration, two different quantities, or two quantities. They don't have to be different from each other. So weight, since it is a force, plus all other forces are derived quantities. In fact, acceleration just by itself is already derived. because acceleration is distance per time per time. It's made up of three quantities itself. Force is therefore made up of four quantities, highly derived. Okay, next is length, but that is just one name that it goes by. Length, width, height, distance all mean the same thing. The amount of separation between two points in space is really what distance is. And that is also fundamental, by the way. It's not made up of other things. But notice that area is not fundamental. Area, well, why? Tell me why it's not fundamental. Yes, it's made up of two distances, length and width. Right? You measure the area of something's length times width. So it's a derived quantity, and so is volume, because it's three dimensions, three quantities that make it up. Therefore, any unit that you use for volume, like the liter, the teaspoon, the acre foot, those are all derived units because volume, the corresponding quantity, is derived. Another thing I'll say about volume as far as the metric system is concerned is that the base unit for the metric system for volume is the liter. Which, as a cube, is about this big. You're used to seeing it in bottle form, but if you put it into a perfect cube, it's 1 decimeter by 1 decimeter by 1 decimeter. 1/10 of a meter by 1/10 of a meter by 1/10 of a meter. And if you break that into 1,000 pieces, break that one cube into 1,000, so it's 1/10, a tenth, and a tenth. Okay, 1,000 little dice, each of which is 1 centimeter wide, that when you put all 1,000 together make up that liter. Each one of those is 1/1,000 of a liter, which is 1 milliliter. And that's why sometimes you see ml, meaning milliliter, for the unit. Other times you see CC, specifically in like clinical settings. CC standing for cubic centimeter. A cubic centimeter is the same thing as 1 milliliter. Just a little factoid. But that's all volume related. Force we've already talked about. Temperature. Here's another one. Just like mass and weight get confused, so do temperature and heat. Related to each other, which is why the confusion exists, but they are importantly different. Heat, by the way, is energy of particle motion. It's the energy of the motion of particles in a sample. And heat is an example of what is called an extensive property. So-called because the extent, how much you have in the sample, matters. The more stuff you have, the more particles there are, and therefore the more movement there is. The more heat there is. Temperature, on the other hand, is an example of an intensive property. How much you have doesn't matter, it's the intensity that matters. The analogy I'll give you is with, it uses a swimming pool. Pretty big sample of water, right? Even a small swimming pool. Well, the water, of course, is made up of particles. All material objects are made up of particles. In the case of water, it's made out of water molecules. But there's a hell of a lot of them in a pool. And so there's a certain amount of heat in that pool, but temperature is not the heat. Temperature is proportional to the average speed of those particles. And now think about an average, how you compute it. You add up all the individuals and then you divide by the number of individuals, right? That's why the size of the sample doesn't matter for an average. You can take an average of one, you can take an average of a population of a trillion, and the size doesn't matter, right? You divide that out. So you can put a thermometer into the swimming pool and get a temperature, which will give you an idea of the average speed of the particles of water in that swimming pool. And you could take a tiny sample from the pool, and you just dip a jar into the pool. Now you, if you do it immediately, you can put the thermometer in that jar, and it will be the same temperature as the overall pool, right? Because it has the same average speed of the particles when you divide out the number of particles. But the swimming pool has a hell of a lot more heat than that tiny jar does, because it has a hell of a lot more particles of water, all of which are moving. So that's why heat is an extensive property. But anyway, back to temperature specifically. Over the centuries, there have been many different kinds of temperature scales, or many different temperature scales devised based on different things. Nowadays, there's really mainly three biggies that are still used, including the ones that we use in the Silly system, which is what? What do Americans use for temperature?
Fahrenheit,
or Fahrenheit if you prefer. Named after a dead German, I assume he was German. That's the scale. What are the units for Fahrenheit?
Degrees.
Not quite. They are degrees Fahrenheit.
So you never just write the degree symbol. It's degrees F
for Fahrenheit. Degrees Fahrenheit. But each degree is a, like any unit, predefined size, right? That's why we call it a scale. There's so many of them. I said there's three. The other two are both metric. In metric, we use centigrade, which is my preferred name, but we're supposed to nowadays call it Celsius. They refer to the same scale, but the reason I prefer centigrade as a name is because the name makes sense. Centigrade means a scale divided into 100 units. Centigrade. But Celsius is what we're supposed to be using nowadays. And the units for Celsius are degrees Celsius. Now, the Celsius scale is more convenient in science than Fahrenheit because it's based on water, which is important for so many reasons in science. We deal with water all the time. And so the 100, it's not that there's only 100 degrees on the entire scale, but the reason it was called centigrade is because there's 100 degrees between two important points having to do with water. The freezing point of water, which is what in Celsius?
Zero Celsius.
And boiling, which is 100. That's the centigrade. Of course, you can go above 100 and below zeros, but that's why it's called that. Well, water will boil whether it's in Celsius or Fahrenheit. It doesn't have any idea about scale. So there's a corresponding boiling point in Fahrenheit. What is it? I'm not boiling point, a freezing point.
32
Fahrenheit. Nice and easy to remember. And boiling?
212.
notice that that's the same range in temperatures as 0 to 100. But it's 180 steps from 32 to 212, whereas it's only 100 steps from 0 to 100. That's why a Fahrenheit degree is smaller than a centigrade degree. Each degree Celsius is 1.8 times as big as a Fahrenheit degree, because 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. That's why you see the 1.8 in equations that convert between the two systems, if you've ever seen those. That's one of the metric scales. The other goes by either of two names. We can call it the absolute temperature scale or the Kelvin scale, also named after a dead human. Now, what are the units on the Kelvin scale or the absolute temperature scale?
Zero and up.
What are the units called, though?
Degrees Kelvin.
Well, it's reasonable to assume that, but it's actually not degrees, so you'd never use the degree symbol. The units themselves are just called Kelvins, which is abbreviated as capital K without the degree symbol. So you say 432 Kelvins, not degrees Kelvin. I said that this is called the absolute temperature scale because it's not based on some arbitrary thing like freezing and boiling of water. It applies to everything. But think about what I said temperature is. The average speed of the particles of a sample. You can go below zero in Celsius and in Fahrenheit because you can get colder than the freezing point of water. But you can't go below zero on the Kelvin scale because you can't go to negative movement. When you get to the point, when you slow down all the particles to the point that they actually are no longer moving at all, that means the temperature is zero, the absolute temperature. That's absolute zero. Can't get colder than that. If they're negatively moving, they're moving again, right? Just in the other direction. So that's why it actually has a floor. The boiling point, the point of absolute zero is zero kelvins. When you measure the freezing point of water on the Kelvin scale, it's 273.15 kelvins. And these are separate scales, Kelvin and centigrade. But not only are they both metric, they both have the same size units. So a Kelvin is exactly the same size as a degree Celsius. They're just offset from each other. Zero is down here. Absolute zero on the centigrade scale would be negative 273.15 degrees Celsius. And it's negative 400 and some. I don't have it memorized for Fahrenheit. Right. So room temperature, which is about 25 degrees Celsius, is 273.15 plus 25. Okay. Let's go to the next page, which is a tabular summary of the metric system, involving a bunch of prefaces or prefixes and their corresponding symbols. A prefix is not a whole word, right? Hence the dash at the end of them. A prefix is just something you stick on to the beginning of a word. So you don't use any of these prefixes by themselves. You might talk about a kilo in drug slang, for instance, but you don't use that word by itself. It's kilo something. Kilo is just a prefix. Notice the middle row of this table doesn't have a prefix associated with it. That's the so-called base, the metric base. Now, the nice thing, one of the nice things about the metric system is that these prefixes apply to all units. Any of the units that you want to use in the metric system can be appended or prepended with this, with any one of these prefixes. You don't have to have all kinds of crazy units like cups and teaspoons that are good for only volume and then other units for other quantities. But whatever given quantity you're measuring, that's what determines the base unit. Every individual quantity has a base unit in the metric system. For instance, if you're measuring mass, it would be grams. And grams is an appropriately sized unit for a lot of uses, but not for all uses. You could measure any mass in grams, but for a tiny, tiny thing, a gram is a huge unit. Like if you're measuring the mass of an atom. If you're measuring the mass of the Earth, yes, you could express it in grams, but it would be a ridiculously huge number because a gram is tiny compared to the Earth's mass. The point here is that you have conveniently a choice of a lot of different size units for any given quantity if you use the metric system. And that's because you can just use a prefix to make a bigger or smaller unit compared to the base. I said that this is a decimal system. It's all based on powers of 10. So there are power of 10 multiples here that you see in the magnitude column. And notice that the base is 10 to the 0, which is equal to what? 1. Any non-zero number raised to the 0 power is 1. So when you multiply by 1, you're not changing it, right? Gram times 1 is just 1 gram. But if the gram is too small for your uses, then you want a bigger unit. So you would go above in the table. Every change in this table of one step above or below involves a change of 3 orders of magnitude. Now, an order of magnitude in science means a change by 10 times. So if you increase by one order of magnitude, it's 10 times as much. A dollar is one order of magnitude as big as a dime, because it's 10 times bigger. Right? If you decrease by one order of magnitude, you're taking one-tenth of that. That's a single order of magnitude. If you go up 2 orders of magnitude, that's 100 times bigger, 10 squared. The exponent gives you the order of magnitude. 1/100th of something is a decrease of 2 orders of magnitude. You see the pattern there? Okay. Well, every step in this table is a change of 3 orders of magnitude. And as you go up from the base, the units get bigger and bigger. So that's why it's 10 to the third in this next step up. 3 orders of magnitude. And the prefix we use for that is kilo. So not kilo by itself, kilo whatever unit you're using. If you're measuring mass, it would be gram, so kilogram. 1 kilogram is 1,000, which is what 10 to the third is, 1,000 grams. More convenient to use for bigger things than a gram is. Okay? Well, if that's still not big enough for you, you can go up another 3 orders of magnitude to mega, which is means a million, 10 to the sixth. A megaliter in volume is 1 million liters. So you might want to measure the swimming pool in megaliters, not the bottle that you're drinking. Right? You choose an appropriately sized unit in the metric system. Notice that all except one of these prefixes that are above the base have their name and the corresponding symbol capitalized. And that's not by accident, that's by design. The capitalization is supposed to remind us that these are bigger than the base, not smaller. Just like genus is capitalized because it's bigger than species. So to be consistent, kilo, which is bigger than the base, should also have a capital K, and the symbol should be capital K. But we can't do that. Of course, why can't we do that?
Kelvins.
Because K already means Kelvin. So it reduces confusion. You have to have every symbol be mean one thing only. Otherwise, it would be capitalized. All the ones that are lowercase are below the base, other than kilo, to remind us that they are smaller than the base unit. But they still go in order, three orders of magnitude steps. So milli always means 1/1000th of whatever it's hooked onto. And therefore, a millimeter is 1/1000th of a meter. A meter is about that big. A thousandth of that is about this big. Right? If you take 1/1000th of that, which is three orders of magnitude smaller than milli, you're at micro, which is 1/1000000th. So 1/1000000th of the base. A micro is a 1/1000th of a milli, but it's 1/1000000th of the base. So a microgram is 1/1000000th of a gram. And a microliter is 1/1000000th of a liter, and so on. Reasonably enough, we use lowercase m for milli. Micro also starts with an m. So it'd be nice if we could use m for that, but we can't since it's already used. And we use what, for micro, what a lot of people erroneously think is a u, because it looks a little bit like a u, but it's actually a mu, which is a Greek m, and it's not this. So don't use the u key in Word or whatever word processor you use for micro. It's a mu, which looks like this. It has that tail before it, to the extent that tail before makes any sense. The thing that hangs down in the front is important there. But the rest of them make sense based on their words outside of Greek. Okay, now, this overall table features an almost ridiculously large range of sizes of units. It goes all the way down to 10 to the negative 24th power, all the way up to 10 to the positive 24th power. So it doesn't matter what you're measuring or what kind of scientist you are, there is a unit that is appropriately sized for your needs. If you're measuring atoms, that lower end is appropriate. If you're measuring galaxies, the top end is appropriate. It's so much range that it's really too much for biology. Biology doesn't really use the top end and the lower end, which is why I'm not going to require you to memorize all of this. If we go to the next page, this is almost the same table, except you see the red parts. Well, those are either too small or too big to be meaningful in biology, so you don't have to know the red ones. The white ones are the same as they were in the previous ones, and those are, notice, three orders of magnitude different each time you go up or down. They were in the previous table. The yellow ones weren't in the previous table. They're stuck in between. So on either side of the base itself, just right above or just right below the base, we've added some other ones just to even have more versatility. And those are only one order of magnitude steps rather than three. So deca with a K means 10 times. A decaliter is 10 liters. Deci with a C is 1/10 of. So a deciliter is 1/10 of a liter. All right? two orders of magnitude up is hecto, meaning 100. And 1/100th in the other direction is centi. Which is why a hundredth of a dollar is called a cent. Okay, so the white and the yellow you do have to know. And I should have mentioned that this is already on the website. But it's not on the same page as the slideshows for upstairs. The upstairs slideshows are on the page that's called Online Lectures and Slideshows, which hopefully you've already visited. Remember that the link, I think, just immediately below that on the Hoffman site is the current term lectures. That's the ones that I make, like today. That's the page, which is, except for this, all those are just audio only. But on that same page, I have a link to this PDF. So you don't have to write this down as I'm showing it. You already have access to it. Okay, anyone have any metric system questions before I go on? Then let's go to the next major topic, which is dimensional analysis. And dimensional analysis is something that most students do their best to avoid doing correctly. And I don't know really the reason why, but it kind of makes sense that one reason is that students use calculators and you don't enter units into calculators, so they don't want to bother writing down units. But doing so is important. Hopefully the examples will make sense of that. Dimensional analysis gets its name because another name for a unit is a dimension. In fact, there are some dimensionless quantities. Like if you had meters per meter, the meters would cancel out, so you really wouldn't have any dimension to that. But dimension is another name for unit. And dimensional analysis uses units in various ways. Dimensional analysis is used for more than what I'm going to talk about today. But one important use of dimensional analysis is to do what is done in this example, which is conversion problems. Converting some measurement that's in some units to originally into other units. That's a conversion problem. The example given here, as you can see, is how many millimeters are in 150 miles. I emphasize the point because that's important. Get into that later. But notice that you have a measurement that's already been done, right? Someone measured a distance, and the measurement in silly system units is 150 miles. In a conversion problem, you are not changing the measurement. In this case, it's a distance measurement, but it could be any quantity. The point is, when you make the measurement, it doesn't change. What you start with, in this case, that distance has to be the same when you're done converting it. All you're doing is expressing it in other units. You're not changing the distance, in other words. All right, now I want to talk about this mathematically. When you use dimensional analysis for a conversion problem, it really amounts to serial multiplication. Serial meaning one after another. You're multiplying things one after another. Now, in math, what do you call things that are multiplied together? Product is the answer you get.
Equation?
No, an equation is a separate thing. Just for the operation of multiplication, what do you call the things that you're multiplying together to get the product? They are called factors. If you're adding two things, it's addends, and that results in a sum. If you're multiplying, they are factors, and they will. The answer is a product. All right? Well, everything you see in parentheses here are factors because they're all being multiplied together. There's two categories of factors here, though. The first one is different from all the rest. This first factor is simply what you're already given. It is the measurement that's already been made. In this case, 150 miles. All these others, as you can see labeled here, are a different kind of factor. They are each individually examples of conversion factors. Now, think about how math work, how multiplication works. If I tell you you have to start with a value, which is the measurement, and you have to multiply it by a bunch of things, but you can't change the value of it by multiplying it, what does that say about what you have to multiply it by? If you have to multiply a number by certain other things, but you have to end up with the same value, what are those things that you're multiplying it by? What specific value? One, which is called the multiplicative identity, because if you multiply by that identity, you just get back what you had originally. It doesn't change value. Right? Well, I just said that in a conversion problem, you're starting with something, multiplying it by a bunch of things, and you don't change the value. So that means each of these individual conversion factors is really just another way of saying one. Usually when we mean one, we just write down the numeral one. But that's one of infinitely many possible ways of expressing one. All of these conversion factors are fractions. Well, there's infinitely many ways just in fractions that you can express one. What has to be true of a fraction if it equals one? Exactly. The numerator has to equal the denominator, as long as they're both not zero. So anything other than zero divided by that same thing is one. 1,000,001/1,000,001 is just another way of saying one, right? And therefore, if you multiply something by 1,000,001/1,000,001, you're not changing the value. Each of these conversion factors is equal to one because what's in the numerator is the same as what's in the denominator. It's just in different units. And that's why you can start with the original measurement, 150 miles, multiply it by one a bunch of times, and the distance has not changed. Only the units have changed. That all make sense? Okay. So let me rewrite this so I can go through it step by step to explain the general process. This is a specific example, and there's infinitely many examples, but the actual procedure is the same in all cases. In all cases, you start the same way, which is simply to write down what you're already given. In this case, it's 150 with a decimal point. Miles, which is not M, that's meters, miles. Now, I could keep it this way, but since I know all my conversion factors are going to be fractions, just for consistency, I like to make it a fraction. You don't have to, but you can make anything a fraction by putting it over one. Okay? The idea here is that we know we're not done, not just because we just started, but because we have miles as our units, and miles can't be in the answer. The answer is calling for millimeters. So think about this as needing to get rid of miles. Well, miles right now are in the numerator. They're upstairs. The only way to get rid of them is to put miles in the denominator. So the next step is to automatically make yourself an empty fraction. Don't think about any numbers. Just make the fraction bar. And think about what you need to get rid of. In this case, it's miles upstairs, so you put miles downstairs. Now, you can go from miles within this conversion factor to any other distance unit you want, as long as you know the values. So you could do this in one step if you knew a conversion factor from miles directly to millimeters. But most people don't have that memorized. So we're going to go from miles to something we know. In this case, I used yards. I could go to feet. Do you know enough about the silly system without looking there how many yards there are in a mile? 20 years of practice. 1,760. How many feet? Well, see, the point is, these two things are not easy to memorize. That's why the system is silly. But we could have done it to feet. I'm doing it to yards. Now, once you have the units, only then do you put some numbers in this conversion factor. And here you have to think about the fact that this whole thing equals one. So the top is the same as the bottom. And I usually bring up the old pizzeria joke here of the guy going into the pizzeria, ordering a pizza. The owner says, do you want that cut into 6 pieces or 8? And he says, 8, because I'm really hungry. Well, he doesn't get any more pizza, right? It's cut into smaller slices. The point here is that if you have the top equaling the bottom, but they're different units, whatever the smaller unit is, there's going to have to be more of them to make up the whole, right? So when you put the numbers in, the bigger number always goes with the smaller unit. Yards are smaller than miles. It's 1,760 yards in 1 mile. If we stopped there, we succeed in eliminating miles, but our answer would be in yards. That's why we know we're not done, because the question's asking for millimeters. So you just continue this process, and you can do it in fewer or more steps, as long as you're doing it with correct conversion factors. But the point is, now I need to get rid of the yards, so I put those down here since they're upstairs. I can go from yards to anything I want. In this example, I went to feet, but I wouldn't have to. Most people know that there's 36 inches in feet, so I could have skipped that step. 36 inches in a yard, I mean. But there's 3 feet in a yard. Feet are smaller, they get the bigger unit. But now I need to get rid of feet, so I do the same thing, and I go to inches. 12 inches in a foot. Now, this is not only a distance conversion problem, it also happens to be a problem that jumps between silly and metric. And for distance, there is one particular conversion factor in distance that is worth memorizing, and that's because it is exact. It's not an approximation. And that's the one I'm going to use right now. That's why I wanted to get to inches, so that I could make the jump from silly, which is inches, to centimeters, which is metric. And the one that you should bother to memorize is that there are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. So that's not rounded to 2.54. You could write it as 2.54 and a million zeros if you wanted. It's exact. And therefore, that's why it's worth memorizing. But now we're out of the silly system. We're still not done, though, because we're in centimeters, right? We need to be in millimeters. Now, with not very much practice with the metric system, you'll find it eventually easy to go directly from centimeters to millimeters. But I don't want you to do that right now. So if you are in the metric system, which we are, but not where you need to be, then instead of going directly to where you need to be, I want you to go from where you are, which is centimeters, to the base, which is meters. And that's because when you memorize all these prefixes and what they're worth, those values of the prefixes are only in relation to the base, not to each other. So when you go from centimeters to meters, you can remember centi means 1/100th of, compared to the base. So it takes 100 of those smaller centimeters to equal 1 meter. Then, once you're at the base, you can go from the base to where you need to be, once again based on your knowledge of the prefix values. Milli means 1/1000th of. It's the smaller unit. So it takes 1,000 of them to equal 1 meter. Now, most students don't want to write these units down, so they want to just deal in numbers. And one huge danger is that you might get one of these flipped upside down without the units. And that will give you a preposterous answer. And a zero. So a zero score. So don't do that. With dimensional analysis, you can tell whether you've set this up properly. If you have set it up properly, then everything will cancel, units-wise, except whatever units need to be in the answer. And that's true here. But we're not done. We've just set it up. We haven't made a calculation yet. And here's where another problem can occur. People don't always use calculators correctly. Calculators use what's called the mathematical hierarchy of operation, or the hierarchy of mathematical operations, which means that multiplication and division are done before addition and subtraction. But we're not dealing with subtraction or addition. Multiplication and division are equal. So that means you could enter this in a calculator in any order you want, as long as you're always hitting multiply for the top and divide by for the bottom. So you could enter it as 3 divided by 1 times 1,000 divided by 100. Of course, that would be a silly thing to do, right? So you might as well just work left to right and then top to bottom. And you don't have to bother entering any ones because they don't change whether you're multiplying or dividing by one. So you would enter, and the important thing is you want to hit equals only once at the end. 150 times 1760 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000 divided by 100, and then equals. And if you do that, the calculator will spit out a long string of numerals. It will not spit out any units. Calculator has no idea what you're measuring, what units it is. And that's why if you just write down the number, it's wrong. That number is just the size. It's called the magnitude. It's not the answer. The answer has to be a magnitude and the units. But if you write down what's on the right here, 241,401,600 millimeters, it's still wrong. And that's because the calculator is giving you information that it's not really justified in giving you. It's giving you more resolution than you actually have, which I'll talk more about later. But this brings up the idea of significant figures. Any given measurement has a certain number of significant figures associated with it. And when you use that in calculations, you are not allowed to end up with an answer that has more significant figures in it than you started with. You can have only as many or fewer, but no more than. That's why this point in the original measurement is important. 1, 5, and 0 are all 3 significant. So you have 3 significant figures to start with. Therefore, you can't end with an answer that has more than 3. Now, some of these numbers that we used in the calculations are fewer than 3, but these are all exact. So it's not just 3 feet per yard. It's 3 point as many zeros as you want. It has infinite number of significant figures. And therefore, the only thing that constrains the number of significant figures is the 3 that are in 150. Is that clear? So when the calculator spits this out, you have to say 2, 4, and 1 are significant, but those are the only ones that are significant because I can't have more than 3 significant figures. And therefore, I have to look at the next one, which is a 4. It's not 5 or more, so I don't round the 1 up. It remains as 2, 4, 1, and these placeholders are still important, but you just have to fill them with zeros. You could write that as 2, 4, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0 millimeters. But instead of standard notation, which that would be, we're writing it in scientific notation. The decimal point here is right here at the end. It takes 8 shifts to get it between the 2 and the 4. So it's 2.41 times 10 to the 8th power. Because every shift is a power of 10. All right, 2.41 times 10 to the 8th millimeters is the answer that you come up with in this procedure for this example. But there is one final step that a lot of people skip, actually. And that is to ask yourself whether this makes sense. Always do that. Now, in this case, we started with 150 miles. You have kind of a good idea how big that is, right? And we're going to express that same distance in millimeters, which are this big. So you'd expect your answer to be huge, right? 150 miles has a lot of these in it. Well, the answer is huge. If you somehow got 2.41 times 10 to the negative 8th, you've either set it up wrong or you've put it into the calculator wrong. So bother to ask yourself whether it does make sense. All right. I'm going to do one more just like this. Because most people need more than 2. I'm going to stick with distance, and I'm also going to stick with going between the systems. But this time we'll go from metric to silly. So let me just make one up. 17.3 gigameters is equal to how many feet? What's the very first step?
What, 17.3 gigameters over 1?
Right. You list what you have to start with. 17.3 gigameters, capital G. And I'm making it over 1 just to keep it a fraction. You don't have to do that. It's always the same first step. The second step is always the same as well. Just start with an empty fraction. Don't think about any numbers yet. We need to get rid of gigameters. They're upstairs, so we put them downstairs. We can go from gigameters to anything we want. Now, once again, we're going between silly and metric. So we want to take advantage of that one that I said is useful to memorize, which involves inches and centimeters, right? In other words, to get to silly, I want to first get to centimeters. Well, you could easily go, if you know the metric system well, easily go in one step from giga to centi. But I don't want you to do that, like I said. I want you to go temporarily to the base. What does giga mean? Well, by next week you'll know that giga means a billion. 1,000 is kili. Kilo, I mean, a million is mega, a billion is giga. So that's huge. The smaller unit is meter, and therefore it takes the bigger number. You could write it with as 1 followed by 9 zeros. I'm just going to write it as 10 to the 9th. 10 to the ninth meters, 1 gigameter. Now that we're at the base, we can go from the base to where we want to be, which is centimeters, so that we can take advantage of that special one.
So I'm going to get rid of meters and go to centimeters.
That allows you to just know what centi means with respect to the base. Centi means 1/100th of. It's the smaller unit, so there's 100 centimeters in 1 meter. All right?
Now we can make the jump to the silly system because we can go from centimeters to inches. That's the one I told you to memorize.
Now, it's upside down compared to the previous example because we're going in the opposite direction. But it doesn't matter whether what's upstairs and what's downstairs. If you're using this one, it's always centimeters that goes with the 2.54.
It's 2.54 centimeters wherever they are
in 1 inch, wherever it is. If we stopped now, we'd be in inches. I want you to be in feet, though, so there's one final step. Get rid of inches. Go to feet.
The smaller inches, there's 12 of
in 1 foot. And the setup should tell you you've set it up correctly because everything cancels except feet. Now, I just made this one up, so I have no idea what the number is, but to make sure we do it right, there's several people should do this at once. And if you all get the same answer, then that'll be correct. But enter it as 17.3 times either 10 to the 9th or 1 followed by 9 zeros times 100 divided by 2.54 divided by 12 equals. Someone give me that, what the numbers that the calculator spits out.
5, 6, 7, 5, it goes on forever.
Yeah, just give me about 5 of them.
So
5, 6, 7, 5, 8,
and then there's
going to
be
6
zeros after that point.
Okay, so does it give an exponent?
Actually,
give me all those numbers, because that's... Give me all those numbers.
So it's 8, 5, 3, 0, 1, 8, 3, 0.72703.
Okay, now that's the magnitude, but we have to have the units, which is feet. This is still wrong, though, right? Because this number has a lot more resolution than we actually have. A lot more significant figures than we're actually allowed to use. All right? So we have to express this in scientific notation,
which means put the decimal point there. That's how many steps? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
And we have how many significant figures that we can use?
3
from 173 originally. Therefore, our answer needs to be expressed as 5.6, and then after the 7 is a 5, so we have to round the 7 up to an 8.
5.68 times 10 to the 10th, because we had to make 10 jumps to get the decimal point there.
And, of course, we have to have the units, which is feet. What's the final step? Does it make sense? Yes. Well, we started with 17 gigameters. A gigameter, 1 gigameter is a billion meters. That's an enormous distance. So if you express that in feet, which are this big, you should expect there to be a hell of a lot of them, right? Very big. And this is, it's times 10 to the 10th. Did anyone else get this same number, by the way? I didn't check whether that was right. Okay, good. Okay, now, what I'm using here as the final answer is scientific notation. And I've been using it without really talking much about it. But it's useful. There's two major reasons that we use scientific notation instead of standard notation sometimes. But those two reasons aren't equal when it comes to importance. The less important reason that we use scientific notation is simply for convenience. If you're dealing with a huge number or a tiny number, you know, like 1.5 trillion, yes, you could write that in standard notation, but you'd have to write down 1.5 and then a bunch of zero. I mean, 1.5 and then a bunch of zeros, right? Or if you're talking about 8 trillionths of something, you could write that in standard notation as 0. a bunch of zeros and then 8, which both of those are a pain in the ass to do. So it's just easier to use scientific notation. That's one reason. But there's a much more important reason why we do it. And that's because in standard notation, there can be ambiguity with respect to how many significant figures there are. Not always. If you have standard notation of something that's all non-zero numbers, like 123, since none of them is zero, you know you have exactly 3 significant figures there. But if you have 120, that features a trailing zero, a zero to the right of the last non-zero number, then it's ambiguous. Now, you know this number has at least 2 significant figures. The 1 and the 2 are significant. But you don't know in standard notation whether that 0 is significant. It might be. Well, if you're giving this value to a reader, you want that reader to know how many significant figures there actually are. If there are actually 2 significant figures, then this would be written in scientific notation as 1.2 times 10 to the second, because you have to go 2 steps to get it, the decimal point there. If it actually has 3, though, the same standard notation would be written in scientific notation as 1.20 times 10 to the second. The idea here is that scientific notation doesn't matter whether there are zeros or not. Everything that becomes before the times 10, however many digits there are, whether they're zeros or not, that's how many significant figures there are. This one at a glance has 2 exactly. This one at a glance has 3 exactly. These you can't tell. You following me on this? And that's why I put the point after the 150. If it were not there, you'd really have to round it to 2 significant figures just in case, because you didn't know. By the way, the reason that the point matters is because if you have a 0 followed by a point, the point really tells you, yes, it's significant. As a matter of fact, if you write anything after the point, and any zeros after it, they're also significant because you use that decimal point. So 150.0 has 4. But it's better to just go the whole way and use the whole scientific notation. It eliminates the ambiguity with respect to significant figures. That's the important use of it. All right, now that is the last page, which does not mean that we're done. This is the time in the performance when I usually say, do you think you can do this on your own? And every term I get a lot of yeses. And then the first quiz comes, and it's failure. So it's fine if you say that you understand and that you eventually will be able to do this through practice. But don't expect it to be automatic. You have to do some practice before the quiz. Okay, now I'm still not done, though. Even though there's no more slides, I still have a few more definitions to give you. 3 definitions, specifically. I want to distinguish between accuracy, precision, and resolution. Best one to start with is accuracy, which is really just a word that means closeness to the truth. Any given measurement, you're trying to get a true value, whatever it is, right? But real measurements, real world measurements, because of you're using instruments, involve errors. So any given measurement has an accuracy associated with, which is really how close it is to the real value. And a lot of textbooks use the useful analogy of throwing darts at a dartboard, wherein each dart thrown represents a measurement taken. And the bullseye, the very center of the dartboard, represents the actual real value. So accuracy is how close you get to that center of the board, right? And notice that every individual measurement has its own accuracy. It makes sense to talk about accuracy of a single measurement. It's just how close it is to the truth. The next one, though, is precision. And precision doesn't really make sense to talk about for one measurement, because precision is repeatability. If you have high precision, then that means measuring the same thing repeatedly is going to give you almost exactly or exactly the same number each time. If you stand on the scale over and over, right after another, your mass hasn't changed, so your weight shouldn't be different, right? Well, a high precision scale should give you exactly the same weight each time. Not all instruments are high precision, though. A cheap scale might give you a different number of pounds each time. In the dartboard analogy, a single dart doesn't make sense for repeatability, right? For precision. So think of throwing three darts or a group of darts. Well, if you've ever stayed too long in a bar throwing darts, you know that you can throw three darts, totally miss the board. But they might just by chance be grouped close together. That would be high precision, because they're saying the same thing, but none of them is actually very close to the truth, right? So it's possible to have high precision and low accuracy at the same time. The goal, of course, in science is to have high precision and high accuracy, which would be a tight grouping right around the bullseye. And also notice that it's actually possible to have low precision and high accuracy just by chance. You know, if you're really drunk and you don't hit the board and they're nowhere close to each other, but they form a big triangle whose center is right on the bullseye, then when you average the three, you would have an accurate average, but with low precision. It's unusual, but it's possible. You see the difference between the two, though? Okay, then that leaves only resolution, which I've already been talking about when we talked about significant figures, but I didn't define it yet. Resolution is a noun, but the verb form is resolve. To resolve means to discriminate. That's another word, but they both mean to tell apart two things, to realize that two things are different. And if you're able to do that, then you say that you have resolved those. The easiest example would be to think about putting two marks on the wall. If I put two black marks separated by some distance from each other on the wall, they're two distinct points in reality, right? And if I stand close enough, I can resolve them. My eyes can tell that they are indeed two distinct points. I have enough resolution to be able to tell them apart. But if I stand back farther and farther, then eventually there will be a distance at which my eyes fail to resolve those points. And they'll look like one point to me, even though they are still two. I don't have enough resolution to be able to tell the difference. Okay? Now, another example using bathroom scales again is that instruments themselves have resolution. So I could have you stand on the scale and tell me your weight. So many pounds if you're using a silly system scale. And then if I say keep standing on the scale, but I'm going to hand you a postage stamp, and I want you to give me the combined weight of you and the stamp, well, it's not going to change the needle, right? Because that instrument doesn't have enough resolution to tell the difference between the weight of you and the weight of you plus the stamp. The weight of the stamp is smaller than the resolution available for the instrument. And that's why we're not allowed to use these non-significant figures. Using them would say, yeah, we have the ability to tell this fine a detail, when actually we don't. That's why you have to turn them into zeros and have them be non-significant. Alrighty? Now, what else should I talk about? This is also a difficult one to listen to, by the way, because it takes a while, but it's important to listen to it. So, be prepared for quiz one. It involves everything I talked about, or it can. It's all fair game. Now, we didn't do anything but listening to me, so this is one case in which everything on the quiz comes from the recording. But usually, most comes from the recording, and some comes from what you did that day. Today, all you have to do is leave, if you're satisfied. Or you can stay around and ask me questions if you want. But I am done.